This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome back. This is episode number 20 of the Until the Whistle podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Myers, and I guess I can't really believe we're up to number 20 on this thing. I know there's, you know, the other guys on the Yak have considerably number more of podcasts than me up. I'll say they're much more of the professionals on this thing than I am, but I'm proud to be at number 20. I think it's been a cool little exercise. You know, I had toyed with the idea of just recording every couple of weeks during the off season, but you know, when it makes sense, I think it's okay to go ahead and have some that, you know, back to back when I have some stuff to talk about. And so there was a little bit of Texas football news, and then the combine took place. So figure that I would highlight those items today on today's podcast and dive into that a little bit. So I don't know, before we get there, hopefully you guys heard my message last week about Twin Liquors dollar sale. I did take advantage of it, and I only used it to stock up on like some of the, I guess what I like to call like my casual sippers. And I really like rye whiskey. So I got a High West double rye. I got a Balcones Texas rye, a Woodford Reserve rye, a Basil Hayden dark rye. And then I got another bottle of one of my favorites, the Four Roses single barrel. And each of them was like maybe $7 to $10 off of the regular price. So, you know, that'll last me for a while. You know, it's always good to have a drink or something before you head out. You know, save a little bit of money when it comes to drinking while you're out, you know, if you're into that kind of thing still. But, you know, I just thought it was a good opportunity for me to kind of load up, stock up my bar a little. And so I picked up those. Oh, and even grabbed a bottle of Douce just because the sale was so good. Can't say that I'm a huge, you know, drinker of that typically, but, you know, I figured why not? It was, I think it's like a regular, like $59 or something. It was on sale for $40. So I was like, you know what? I'll throw this in there too. So I walked away with, I think it was like maybe 6 bottles or so, 6 or 7 bottles. And, you know, I thought that was a pretty good little haul that I had. So looking forward to cracking one of those open. Probably not tonight, though. I'm recording this on a Tuesday night. And, well, I take the back. I really should be drinking something right now, but I'm not. I may pause it here and go grab something because it is so damn cold. Woke up this morning, it was like 26 degrees out. I think right now the temperature, you know, it eked its way up some to like 40. And then it's supposed to be like in the 70s on, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, which is perfect, except for the fact that I'm not going to be here. I'm going to L.A., told you guys my brother had moved out there, and so I'm going out there to visit them. So it's actually going to be cooler in the L.A. area. They're going to be in the low 60s, high 50s this coming weekend while I'm out there. And so it's actually going to be much nicer and awesomer than it is out there. Plus, I'm going to have to deal with L.A. traffic. So wish your boy some luck, man, because as much as I'm looking forward to getting out there and seeing them and, you know, helping out with some things around the house, I'm not looking forward to the weather actually being colder there than it is here. And I'm not looking forward to having to deal with L.A. traffic. But, you know, it is what it is. So at any rate, like I said, had a little bit of Texas news come down the pipe this week. And so figured we'd dive in. Start with guys currently on the team, one of which is safety Brandon Jones. Looks like he had an ankle surgery last week to repair his high ankle sprain that caused him to miss a number of games this season. And so as a result, he's going to miss all of spring ball. You know, for some of the younger guys, you would maybe worry about that. But with him being a senior to be leader, I think, you know, that he'll be able to bounce back just fine. He missed games this year against Tulsa, West Virginia, Texas Tech, and Iowa State. So, you know, this will be an opportunity for him to get fully healthy and then, you know, be able to get back before camp. And so what it'll also do is give a lot of the young DBs an opportunity to get some quality reps, because he should be back in the fold in time for training camp. But, you know, you got some guys, you know, that, you know, could really use some additional reps that, you know, they don't typically get in the games that'll help in their development. One guy in particular I'm thinking of is Demarion Overshawn. I think they'll use it as an opportunity to, you know, log him some reps at safety and some of the different spots on the defense that Todd Orlando uses, and, you know, take advantage of, you know, those reps. So that'll be good to see. But yeah, Brandon Jones had a surgery, you know, certainly wish him a quick recovery. But all signs seem to be pointing that he should be able to bounce back in time for training camp, which is what is most important. And then a couple weeks back, we had talked a little bit on the recruiting front about some of the grad and JUCO transfers that are coming in for visits. And one of the guys that I was really, really high on was Parker Braun, the all-ACC, first-team all-ACC guard from Georgia Tech. I just really, really like what I had seen from his tape. You know, just had that nasty streak about him. Seemed to have a motor that was always going. Was just one of those guys that, you know, kind of gave me a throwback to, you know, some of the guys I played with. You know, your Casey Stutters and your Lyle Sinlines. He kind of reminded me of them on film. And so we were fortunate enough to have him in for his official visit this past weekend. I believe he brought his family with him. And when it was all said and done, he decided to go ahead and shut down everything and go ahead and commit to the Longhorns. So, you know, chalk that up to another one for the good guys. I think he should be here this summer, if I'm not mistaken, but if not, for sure in August. And, you know, there's some talk of him potentially wanting to redshirt because, you know, he was a guy that's been talked about as, you know, taking the recruiting process in a very methodical manner and really looking at the long term of his career and thinking that, you know, there's a possibility that he may be able to benefit from redshirting and then, you know, having an extra year in Yancey McKnight's strength and conditioning program that would possibly, you know, help better prepare him for the NFL. And while what happens remains to be seen there, I think it was reported that, you know, that is certainly still on the table for him. And that was one of the reasons why he, you know, was looking at, you know, coming to UT and ultimately made the decision to. I read an article that Jason Sukumel posted on Orange Bloods that I really, really liked about his commitment. And one of the things that I like most about it was a quote that he got from one of the media guys that covers Georgia Tech. And the quote was something along the lines of, he doesn't talk a lot, doesn't have social media, barely has a cell phone. He's just kind of his own guy. And I loved hearing that because that is like a stark contrast to what you see from a lot of these kids. And this guy's a grown man, you know, honestly, at this point, has been in the Georgia Tech program and has had personal success and certainly logged a lot of reps. And so I think he's a guy that's a candidate to come in and instantly, you know, just become one of the best players on the team, instantly become a stalwart along the offensive line, secure that interior of the offensive line. And, you know, as much as I hate how much we use Sam in the run game, a guy like this, you know, only bolsters what we do from a short yardage and goal line standpoint, whether that's using Sam or incorporating some of the backs. So all in all, just a what I can, from what I can tell, I guess, just seems to be a home run of a commitment. And, you know, can't wait to see what he's able to do once he gets on campus. And then another guy that was offered. He had already, I think, come in. I can't remember if he had come in on official or unofficial, but was a guy in the name of Willie Tyler, who was a JUCO. And so he ended up committing to Texas. He'll end up counting towards the 2019 class, and he'll have 4 years to play. 4 years to play three seasons at Texas. And so this is a guy that's 6'7", 315 pounds. You know, when you see somebody like him being recruited, you kind of just have to tip your hat to Herb Hand and what he's doing and the way he's going out and seeking out some of these. Just behemoth of a man. You kind of look at a guy like Christian Jones that got, you know, was kind of viewed as a late ad and certainly an under the radar prospect. But when you see him, he looks like $1 million, and the coaches have really raved about how hard he's worked and that kind of thing. So looks like, you know, this guy could be, you know, someone in a similar mold of that. And, you know, with him having the number of seasons that he still has to play, he's not your typical JUCO that just has 1 or 2 years left. You know, I think he's certainly a candidate that can come in redshirt this year, unless he just really blows everyone away with his play. But I think he could be someone that could be impactful in the line in the years to come. He has a little bit of a different path than most. So, you know, he came out of high school and went to Garden City Community College, but that was as a defensive lineman. And the Garden City coaches wanted him to, you know, bump over to the offensive line. And he wasn't really feeling that. So he took a gray shirt and then eventually made his way to Iowa Western after he had, you know, a pretty significant growth spurt. And so I think from there, you know, he's been on the offensive side of the ball for a little bit. He's had an opportunity to start some games at the JUCO level, at least kind of grind it out at the JUCO level some, and probably has some good lessons learned there. And some things that he can help impart on some of the younger guys at Texas. But anytime you can get a guy that's 6'7", 315 pounds, can move and bend pretty well, you know, you'll take that and you trust him in the hands of Yancey McKnight's strength program and under Herb Hand's tutelage. And I think you got a good thing going there. So Willie Tyler, welcome to the fold. And just more to continue to you know, build on this recruiting class. So, I mean, you look at it, they took several offensive linemen. You now got a grad transfer and a JUCO. Probably with them taking Willie Tyler, I would guess that means that R.J. Proctor out of Virginia isn't going to be in the plans for joining Texas, whether that was a decision he made or one that we made, I'm not sure. But that's just kind of what I would guess. I don't really have any inside knowledge to that, but that just seems like what would make sense. But still, you know, with the kids coming in the 2020 recruiting class, you would have to think that if you're a running back or a quarterback, even though we already have Hudson Card in the fold, but, you know, I know there's a talk of us going pretty hard after the Jackson kid out of Duncanville. You know, with the way this transfer portal thing is shaking out, you're probably going to have to take two quarterbacks, if not every year, every other year. And so you would have to think that you combine, you know, some of the riches we've seen at the skill position in this most recent class, and then what Herb Hand and Coach Herman are putting together along the offensive line, that would have to be a bonus for any quarterback looking at Texas, and certainly any running back. When you talk about, you know, some of the top names that we've heard, you know, considering Texas and you know, with Texas, you know, hotly pursuing Zach Evans, Kendall Milton. And the other one is escaping me right now, but he's currently committed to OU, I think, is another 5-star talent. So, you know, guys that are, you know, still on Texas's radar, still, you know, to be seen how the 2020 class is going to unfold. But you know, adding guys like Parker Braun and Willie Tyler to the fold can only help. So, you know, kudos to Tom Herman and the staff for not resting on their laurels and just continuing to go out and try and uncover every, you know, rock and every stone that they're able to, you know, find guys that are not only a good fit for the program, but will have, you know, the continuity that we're seeking along the offensive side of the ball. So happy to see that, and looking forward to see what else is to come. The other big bit of news I guess this past weekend, or I guess starting late last week and then into the weekend, and even I think yesterday as well, they were still wrapping things up, was the 2019 NFL Combine. And so this year, as previously announced, we had five guys receive Combine invites. And I think that was maybe only second in the Big 12 to OU. I think OU sent eight of their guys to the Combine. But, you know, just good to see us being represented there and for the most part being represented well. And I say for the most part because of a little tidbit that, you know, or a piece of the conversation that we'll save kind of for the last of the Texas guys. But for the most part, everybody did, you know, did pretty well there. You had Charles Omenihu. He measured at 6'5", 280. Ran a 4.92, so that was probably not, you know, as good of you know, a time that he would be looking for. But then again, he's a 6'5", 280-pound D lineman. So while there were some guys that were bigger and moved a little bit faster, you know, he still showed very well in some of the other areas. And for the most part, you know, I don't think you put too much stock in what a D lineman of his stature runs in the 40. But you're more interested in seeing how he moves in other settings, how explosive he can be. And he showed that with a 36.5-inch vertical. That was the sixth highest vertical of any defensive lineman. And the five ahead of him all weighed less than him. So he was asked, you know, a number of questions, of course. And the NFL player that he compared himself to was a bigger version of Chandler Jones, which was interesting enough because, of course, this is the time of year where all the different mock drafts come out. And one that I saw today had him projected to New England with the final pick of the first round. So that would be a very New England thing to do, especially given that they didn't tag Trey Flowers. So they allowed the, you know, the franchise tag window to come and go without using it on anyone. And that would be a very New England type pick. You know, a guy with a lot of upside, tons of length, and explosion, and just, you know, would be really cool to actually see him, you know, playing alongside Malcolm Brown. So secretly, I'm kind of hoping for that. And then a friend of mine from Dallas that I played flag football with when I was living up there is actually Charles's brother. So, you know, just secretly kind of rooting for that because that would, I think, be a good landing spot for him. And then had a couple of DBs that were represented there in Chris Boyd and Devontae Davis. I think Chris Boyd did well, but, you know, well, okay, let me, I caveated that, but I don't think there needs to be a caveat in that he certainly did well. He bounced back from a rough Senior Bowl and tested really, really well. The only area where I was going to caveat that is I was going to say, you know, for the most part, he was expected to test well, and test well he did. He measured at 5'11", 201. Ran a 4.45, which was the ninth fastest 40 time out of all the cornerbacks. And then he had the fourth fastest shuttle time, which is, you know, one of those drills that's important just for showing change of direction and that kind of thing. He had a 36.5-inch vertical, so again, showing that explosion. Benched 19 reps at 225, and so that led all the cornerbacks at the combine. And so, you know, when you get to looking at it, I mean, he was – for the most part, in the top five, top 10 of every drill that he was asked to go do. He was put together, you know, really well, and is you know, a guy that I think still has some potential in the NFL. He certainly has to, you know, clean up some areas when the ball's in the air and tracking it and, you know, making sure he's not losing sight of his man, that kind of thing, getting beat on double moves. But to his credit, you know, he was asked a number of questions about those things. And when asked, you know, what his weakness was, his answer was that it was his consistency. And he took full responsibility for the plays that he was beat on. And so that's what you want to hear out of a guy. Kind of shows some growth from, you know, him having, I guess what you could call some distractions or whatever early on in his career. And even last year a little bit when he kind of got into the social media tiff with Emmanuel Acho. But I think, you know, he showed very well and probably did good to, you know, bounce back from, you know, like I said, that rough Senior Bowl he had. Now, every year you hear about like some of these really weird questions that come from the combine that guys are asked. And it sounds like this year, Chris Boyd, you know, probably got the weirdest one. For some reason, an NFL team thought that it made sense to ask him if he had both testicles. And I guess if he had like a history of cancer or something, maybe that would make sense. But like some of this stuff I just don't get, you know, I guess these guys are trying to like get in their heads a little bit and maybe, you know, see if you can catch them off guard, see if you can rile them up or something. But sometimes I just think, you know, some of this stuff is kind of ridiculous. And so, you know, as professional of a league it is, you know, I wish that, you know, some of that stuff wasn't in it, because it just, I don't know, it just seems kind of bush league to me, kind of crap. And even like listening to some of the interviews that were done, like you had certain people asking like Gary Johnson how it felt to, you know, be on the Kansas team when they or on the Texas team when they lost to Kansas. Well, Gary Johnson was in Kansas, but he was playing JUCO ball. He wasn't on the Texas team yet. So just little stuff. I mean, I know there's tons of guys that they're interviewing, but, you know, I don't know. I just feel like it doesn't take a whole lot to do a little bit of research about who you're talking about, what you're talking about, to make sure that, you know, it has some consistency and relevance. So, but, you know, whatever, off of that soapbox. Who else was there? The other DB that I mentioned that we had at the combine was Devontae Davis. He checked in at 6'2", 202. Ran a 4.57 40, so not blazing, but not terrible either, but did really well in his other drills. He had a 37-inch vertical and then ran a 6.7 6.3 cone, which ended up being the fourth fastest three cone of all the corners. So to do that at 6'2", over 200 pounds, you know, another guy that I think was expected to test well. And so he certainly, you know, did sound enough in that area, and he may run again at his pro day. I would expect that Chris Boyd is going to stand on the majority of, if not all of, his numbers from the combine, and then probably just work position drills. But a guy like Devontae maybe would run again, but you know, I don't think it's a huge indictment on him to run a 4.57. He maybe would like to see it a little bit faster, but I mean, at the end of the day, it just kind of is what it is in that respect. So, you know, another guy that you end up seeing testing in the top, you know, 5 to 10-ish of his position in most of his categories. So he certainly showed himself well. And then the last guy on the defensive side of the ball was Gary Johnson. You know, a bit undersized, if you will, coming in at 6 foot, 226, but the one thing he's known for certainly is being able to, you know, run like a gazelle. And that he did. He ran a 4.43, which is third fastest 40 of all the linebackers. But what was kind of interesting to me is that his three cone and shuttle weren't all that exceptional. So neither was his vertical jump. It was only 33.5 inches. So, you know, it's just kind of, you know, something to take a look at. At the end of the day, I think for all these guys, the film is what's really going to you know, sell a team on them. And so he was probably looking at being a late round guy anyways. But with the way that this NFL is, you know, and kind of the changing of, you know, how things have become so spread out and, you know, really looking for some of these, you know, faster linebackers that can really run and hit, you know, if in the right system, he could certainly be a guy that could flourish. And so, you know, I think the 40 time certainly helps him, the three cone and the shuttle not so much. So I would suspect that, you know, he'd probably redo those at UT's pro day later this month. But outside of that, you know, for the most part, acquitted himself pretty well. And then finally, of course, the one that I think was maybe most disappointing was little Jordan Humphrey. He checked in at 6'4", 210, and I want to say I remembered him playing at like 225 or 230. So, you know, he dropped some significant weight, but unfortunately ran times of 4.79 and 4.75. And, you know, there have been some guys to run, you know, slow 40. I think Anquan Boldin comes to mind, ran like a 4.71 or something like that, and was still taken, you know, in a pretty decent spot by the Cardinals when he was initially coming out. But I would say he probably had more projection than Lil Jordan had on tape when he was coming out of Florida State. essentially Lil Jordan only had, you know, one plus season. Now, it was a really great season this past year, but he doesn't have a ton of tape that can be shown, but, you know, certainly enough. But I mean, it's really disappointing to see him drop weight and run that slow. And, you know, he had the slowest time of any wide receiver at the combine. Now, there were a number of guys who chose not to run, and for different reasons, you know, they did. But 37 guys did run, and LJ was the 37th of those 37. There were, the first thing you say, okay, well, he's a bigger wide receiver. Well, like I said, he checked in at 210. So from what I can recall, he dropped some weight from his playing weight. Probably would have been better off just running at his playing weight if, you know, the time wasn't going to be that much much more negligible. But, you know, I was like, all right, well, maybe, you know, maybe there's something to that. Nah, there's 15 players that ran, 15 wide receivers that ran, that weighed more than him and ran faster than him, at the combine. So, you know, just certainly not the most stellar of a time, but, you know, if you kind of look at what he does, you know, those type of speeds are typically, well, let me say that differently. He's a big slot receiver. And that's something that I think is a little bit, I won't go all the way to say new to the NFL, but in terms of drafting a big slot, you know, it typically hasn't happened that way. You think, here in years of late, you've had like Larry Fitzgerald kick down inside, but, you know, he came into the league as an outside receiver. I don't think that Lil Jordan has the capability to come into the league as an outright outside receiver. You have guys like, you know, Julio Jones that are now getting moved around and into the slot to create mismatches. Guys like that. But of course, you know, he has much more speed, much more all around skill. So by no means am I trying to compare LJ to Julio, but, you know, like I said, you just look around at it, 33 and a half inch vertical, didn't do a whole lot on bench, but, you know, that really doesn't matter a whole lot for wide receivers. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, he's just a good football player that probably doesn't test well and probably isn't ever going to test well. And, you know, he's the one guy of the Texas guys that came out early. And so, you know, the first thing you would say is, he should have come back for another year. And while I get the logic in that, I'm still not entirely sure that another year would have done a whole lot. I don't know if, you know, shaving off, I don't know how much more time he would have shaved off his 40. It just seems like if you're running a 4.79 or 4.75, that's probably, you know, what your straight line speed is at. But he has football speed, you know, and to me that counts more than anything. So, you know, hopefully he gets drafted to a team that can utilize him in the right place. But if not, if he goes undrafted, which is a very real possibility. I mean, we saw it, you know, last year with guys like Holton Hill. You know, we've seen it before with, you know, other big names across the country. It's not out of the realm of possibility that he goes undrafted. And if that's the case, it may work out even better for him if he goes, you know, a little bit more of the Puna Ford route. Gets an opportunity to pick his spot in a place that, you know, he could really have a chance to compete. So still wish him well. I think Anwar really covered this topic well on his Sunday Pulpit. And then again, in his Drunk Uncle podcast earlier this week on the Yak, you know, just about, you know, how it's something you can respect, I think is the way he put it. You respect a guy's decision, but sometimes it's hard to watch. And I couldn't agree more with, you know, someone like LJ, you certainly wanted to see better for him. And so now he kind of has that negative buzz. And so you would hope that he comes out to his pro day and is able to kind of improve upon that a little bit. But like I said, he's one of those guys that at the end of the day, you turn on the tape and he just is what he is. So a couple other things I'll highlight before we get out of here. A lot of talk has, you know, certainly been going on about Kyler Murray, and rightfully so. But he weighed in at 5'11", 207 pounds. So he weighed more than Russell Wilson did when he was coming out of, was it NC State or Wisconsin? I think it was NC State. I know he played for both. I just can't remember which one that he ended up, whatever. When Russell Wilson was coming out of college, Kyler Murray weighs more than him. And then he had bigger hands than Baker Mayfield did last year. And for the most part, he's been being touted, as the number one overall pick to the Cardinals. A lot of smoke coming out of the combine is that the Cardinals are looking to trade Josh Rosen. And if that's the case, then that means that Kyler Murray did enough to impress them. But what's interesting is there was a report that came out today, and I've heard this in a couple of other settings. I try to listen to a lot of sports related podcasts, especially when I was preparing for this episode, because I wanted to kind of get the thoughts of some of our guys from the national perspective. But one of the things that they mentioned about Kyler Murray is, you know, there was some talk of him not doing well in the interviews with the teams. And someone really came out and just put their name by it today in Charlie Casserly. And he went on NFL Network and flat out said that he was, I guess, didn't really show to be a good leader. Didn't really show to interview well. And then I think he even said something like he did below average on the whiteboard, which was kind of shocking. But then on the flip side of it, it wasn't. You know, I think I've, you know, been one quick to say that I kind of take Kyler Murray to just be a douche. Like, he just kind of has that personality. And a lot of people say, you know, he kind of takes after his father in that respect. You know, you've seen him do some interviews and they just kind of come off awkward. He almost comes off a little bit as like socially awkward or just a person that's not really comfortable talking. And so I could see him, you know, get in front of some of these, you know, coaches, GMs, whoever it is that's interviewing him, and just not, you know, not really coming off very well, not being all that impressive. But at the end of the day, man, the kid is a player. At every, you know, stage of his career to this point, you know, he's kind of been told he's too small. He's probably the greatest high school quarterback in Texas football or in Texas high school football history, arguably. And then, you know, he only went on to just, you know, crush all kinds of records and win the Heisman at OU this past season. So, you know, I'm not one to put anything past him, but it'll be interesting to see how this plays out probably in the next, you know, 24 to 36 hours. I mean, I think that's probably around the time where you would see, you know, guys come out of the woodworks to either defend him or, you know, hear some more smoke to that. But at the end of the day, like I said, there's rumors coming out today that the Cardinals are shopping around Josh Rosen. And if that is, in fact, true, then it sounds like Kyler Murray did enough to impress Cliff Kingsbury. So, you know, he said early on that he would take Kyler with the number one overall pick. And it's looking like things may shape up that way. And then just a few other guys I'll touch on real quick. Two of them out of the Big 12. Marquise Brown weighed in at 166 pounds. And because of his foot issue, you know, we know he's a burner. But that's tiny. I was listening to a podcast, and on it they said the only players under 170 pounds since 2000. So for almost 20 years now, the only players under 170 pounds to have more than 300 yards in a season are J.J. Nelson and Taylor Gabriel. So two guys in almost 20 years to be that little. And none of them were taken as highly as, you know, some are considering taking Marquise Brown. There's some talk of him inching his way into the first round. If not, I'd be shocked if he didn't go in the second just because of the production he put on, you know, at OU. But just interesting little tidbit that I heard. And then, you know, kind of in comparison to LJ, you had a guy in Hakeem Butler who was measured in at Iowa State. Excuse me, you know, measured in at 6'5", 227 pounds, did 18 reps on bench, 36-inch vertical, and then he ran a 4.48. So, you know, full 17 pounds, you know, heavier than LJ, and, you know, significantly faster, seemingly more explosive. Now, he's had, you know, some issues catching the ball that, you know, teams may try to nitpick, but overall, I mean, he just blew up in testing and is a guy that I'm really looking at pretty hard at being one of the top receivers to come off the board in the draft. And then finally, just the last guy I was going to, you know, kind of bring up was DK Metcalf out of Ole Miss. I mean, you know, if by now you haven't heard of him, I'm sure you have, but, you know, he's just built like a brick house. Like, the guy is just, I mean, he's barely 21 years old. And if you've seen, you know, some pictures of him on the internet, he just, I mean, the way he's put together is just, simply incredible. I mean, the guy, he looks like he's like a bodybuilder or something, you know? And I think I saw something that said he had like 1.6 body fat or 1.9, some ridiculous amount of body fat. So, I mean, it's just pretty wild. You know, if he wasn't the winner of the combine, then, because I think, you know, what did he measure in at? Let's see if I can find it real quick. DK Metcalf. Hold on real quick. I'm going to pause this thing so I can make sure I get this right. Okay, here we go. So DK Metcalf, he measured in at 6'3", 228, ran a 4.33 in the 40, did 27 reps on bench, had a 40.5-inch vertical jump, but he only ran a 7.38 in the cone drill, three cone drill, which is very pedestrian, and a 4.5 in the 20-yard shuttle. So, you know, basically, what does all that tell you? Effectively, he has tons of straight line speed, but, you know, isn't that great at changing directions. So, you know, while, you know, he sounds like an awesome prospect with some of those numbers I just reeled out, you know, my money would actually be on a guy like Hakeem Butler to be the better pro. So even with that, though, I mean, guys are always wowed by big guys, you know, running that fast. So if he didn't win the draft, I would probably say that would have to go to Montez Sweat, the edge defender out of Mississippi State. This guy checked in at 6'6", 260 pounds, did 21 reps on bench, and ran a 4.41 40. So, I mean, I don't know. It's just pretty crazy when you look at that and then some of the production that he had behind it. So, you know, there was all in all some, you know, really good performances that you saw from guys at the combine. And, you know, hopefully as Texas continues to secure more and more elite talent, you know, we'll be at a point where we're sending, you know, eight guys to the combine like OU did this past year. And, you know, just another symbol of this program taking the next step in the right direction. But for the most part, you know, all the guys, you know, with the exception of LJ, I think, improved their stock and or at least helped maintain it. Based on their performances. So really that's it. That's all I got for this week's episode. Just wanted to touch on some of those items, and, you know, have that for you guys to listen to. As always, I really appreciate you guys listening. Can't say that enough. You could certainly be doing other things with your time, but you're choosing to, you know, kind of spend some of it to listen to what I have to say. So as always, please don't hesitate to give me a buzz on any of the social media. I'm Marcus at Marcus Myers on all social media platforms, open to any dialogue, open to, you know, any questions, any people you'd maybe like to hear from an interview perspective, that kind of thing. So, you know, again, thank you. And then thanks to the guys at the Yak for all that you do and for giving us this platform. So, like I said, that's all I got for this week. Hope you guys stay warm. South by Southwest is about to get ready to kick off, so the traffic is going to pile up here in Austin pretty quick. So if you're going to be out and about, you know, keep that in mind, but enjoy some of the festivities. And that's all I got. So again, this has been Marcus Myers, episode number 20 of the Until the Whistle podcast, and I'll catch you the next time the whistle blows.